welcome back to a new edition of The Window, your source for international football. The whole gang is here. Brandon's back. We're very
excited. Back. I've made it back from Qatar.
That's right. He's back from his adventures, and we're gonna hear about that here in just a second. But yeah, thanks everybody for tuning in to another episode, and we are now into the quarterfinals of the World Cup, so we're very excited about that. In this episode, we're gonna talk a little bit about we're gonna pick up where we left off with Tom. In our last episode, we're gonna talk about the third match day, and we're gonna talk about the round of 16. So we're pretty excited to dig in here. So without further ado, Brandon, tell us a little bit about your experience at the World Cup. So were there for how long? 10 days?
We were there for 9 nights. We got in Saturday night, the 26th. Extremely tired. We were able to catch the France-Denmark game and a little bit of the Argentina-Mexico game before we just kind of called it a night. We had an overnight flight and were awake for way too long. So tried to make it through, tried to get adjusted to the time, and then hit the ground running really that Sunday the 27th with Japan-Costa Rica and went from there. So we were there for 8 full days, did 10 games. And it was exhausting, honestly. The games were fantastic. We walked a ridiculous amount, the way that FIFA had set up the entrances and exits from the stadiums. It looked a lot closer on the maps, and the time that they indicated you needed was, I think, a little bit optimistic, because you really had to get to the stadium, I would say, a good hour before the game started to just make sure you got through security and the lines and everything. Got in, got to your seat, got some food and drink if you wanted. But yeah, the games were fantastic. I think every one of the games that we attended had meaning, and it was really exciting, really being in the midst of fans from all over the world and talking to people from all over the world. And it was definitely a lot of fun. So looking forward to talking a little bit more about some of the specific games as we get into the groups.
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions for you, and we probably won't get to them all, but some of the ones that are top of mind are, so how was it flying in? Did you get through the airport in a good amount of time without issue?
Yeah. I thought it was relatively easy. Qatar and Hamad International advertises itself as the best airport in the world. And really getting through customs, getting our luggage and walking through the airport, it was quick, seamless. I think a lot of the pre-work that Qatar did, really getting everyone's passport information, the Hayya card, and getting everyone set up, made for a really seamless process. So in terms of flying in and navigating through the airport, getting to the hotels and things like that, I thought it was really seamless and worked pretty well.
Okay, cool. And were you staying at a hotel the whole time, or were you in the fan village?
We were not. We were in a hotel the whole time. So we were, fortunate enough to be able to work that out where we could stay at a hotel. We had to combine a few things. So we got a few nights through the hospitality package. We got a few nights through the FIFA accommodation website, but we were able to coordinate it where we were in one location the entire time, which I think really helped us a lot to be able to travel throughout Doha, get to the different games and such, and be in a location that worked well.
Was it super hot?
It was super hot when you're in the sun. So really walking around, and I think they actually did a really good job with the stadiums having the air conditioning. We went to two matches that were during the day, and because Doha is so close to the equator, it gets dark relatively early. So 4 o'clock, the sun was going down. The first matches locally were 1 o'clock before the final match day. So unless you were at a 1 p.m. game, you were pretty much going to a game after the sun was going down or just about down. So actually being in the stadium wasn't too bad. And for the 1 o'clock games we did attend, they had these air conditioner is just kind of blowing freezing cold air on your back, so you're able to stay cool. So other than if you're out and about really during the day before 4 o'clock standing in the sun, it was pretty hot. But once you got past that time, and I think the city itself tended to lean towards more of a nighttime atmosphere where people are getting food and out at the fan festival. And if you wanted to go somewhere to watch games and have some drinks and things like that, it was more after the sun was down, and it definitely cooled off a lot. So the heat wasn't as much of an issue as I expected it to be.
Okay. Nice. Well, I see you're rocking the Japan kit and the yes. Japan scarf. So were they your yes. favorite fan base, or who did you see the most of?
The Japanese fans. I mean, you heard them on TV. I mean, they're relentless with their cheers, even if they're down, the support. They were great. On the way in, they had headbands that were given out. We grabbed some Japanese headbands and threw them on. And so, I think the thing that was really cool for us was, which I didn't see as much of, which I was a little bit surprised, I didn't see as many neutrals really at these games. And coming from the United States, before we went, decided, okay, for this match, we're going to root for this team. This match, we're going to root for that team. We did not see as much of that in terms of just neutrals going to matches and just supporting a team. It tended to be more people that were cheering for their own team. And they saw other people that were rooting for their team. So that was really cool. You know, some of the Japanese people seeing us and saying, you know, we're glad you're rooting for Japan. And that occurred with Korea as well. Same with Morocco. They were really welcoming from a perspective of, you know, this isn't your country, but we appreciate you rooting for us. So the Japanese were great. The Koreans were great. The Moroccans were great. Those were definitely three that stuck out to us as being really great fan bases.
Nice. Yeah, we'll talk about the Moroccan fans in a little bit, yes. I'm sure, because they are definitely making an impact at this World Cup.
Absolutely.
I have to say, this has probably been one of my – I know it's been very controversial, but at least on the field, this has been one of my yeah. most favorite World Cups I think I've ever watched. It's just been entertaining, despite having like 4-5, 0-0 draws, right, you know, throughout the group stage. I've loved every second of it. So it's been really good.
Absolutely.
Did you make it to the Conca Cafe?
We did not. We did not make it to the Conca Cafe. We actually, sadly to say, we didn't make it to the fan festival either. It was something that we had on our minds, and just kind of walking around the stadiums, and we were really sore from walking a lot.
Yeah,
we heard some not great things, that the fan festival was even worse in terms of walking, getting in lines, things like that. But we did try to get around to the city as much as possible. We did make it to a few different team hotels, saw some players, saw the buses. We saw Tunisia, Croatia, saw the Korean team. We went to the USA hotel as well. And saw a few of the players around there. So we tried to do a little bit more of that in terms of getting a little bit closer to the teams and players themselves.
Yeah, and it lended itself to that, right? With everything Absolutely. Being in such tight quarters. And yeah, you sent me a message while you were there. You saw Cameron Carter-Vickers getting his haircut. Is that right?
That is true.
Right before he got the start on against Iran. So
we saw him, and I saw I it took me a little while to look at the roster, admittedly. Seeing, you know, player horizontal and not getting a great look at his face. And we were identified him, and I should have known that that he would be starting after after seeing that, but we had to wait a few hours to hear officially about that.
Nice. That's awesome. Okay, well, I won't pepper you with any more. Well, let's dig in here.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about third round of group stage matches, right? The final match day in the group. And we're going to kind of go through this a little bit quick because we want to get to the round of 16 discussion. But I think there are some things that lend itself to talking about. So we'll start with Group A. Obviously, the two teams that went through, Netherlands and Senegal. Netherlands beating Qatar, probably not really, you know, anything surprising if we're being honest. Qatar was already out at that point in time, and the Netherlands really just needed to see it through. But in the other game, Senegal beating Ecuador, was this surprising to you at all?
I think it was a little surprising. Our numbers favored Ecuador. Our numbers favored Ecuador heading into the tournament. And knowing Senegal needed a win, our numbers favored Ecuador to advance. But I think Senegal was an African team that most people expected. If you ask them to name one team from Africa that would progress out of the group, Senegal would have been, I would say, most people's pick. I think there was definitely optimism about Morocco as well, but Senegal was a team that I think a lot of people expected would be that African team to advance. So the result was a little bit surprising to me, but Senegal is obviously a team that has a lot of good talent. There were questions without Mane. Would they be able to get out of the group? But they consistently showed well, and they deserve that win and deserve to progress.
Yeah, it was a pretty entertaining game. You know, I think the thing that we kind of come back to with, at least with Ecuador, is their goal scoring threats, right? Like defensively, we know they're pretty sound. Senegal played a really good game. And was able to punch through with two goals, you know, and towards the end of the game, you just started to wonder where that tying goal was going to come from for Ecuador, right? So perhaps going into this next cycle, that's something that they need to address. You know, you just don't know how long. Help me out here. I'm drawing a blank.
Enter Valencia.
Enter Valencia. Thank you. Yeah. You just don't know how much longer he has, right? So, yeah, that's kind of it for Group A. So obviously, Netherlands and Senegal going through there. Let's hop down to Group B, and then we'll talk about the round of 16 match between these two groups. So the final match day, England putting together a strong second half performance against Wales to take that 3-0 and top the group. And then in the game that I think a lot of people were very interested in for many different reasons, the U.S. comes out on top against Iran 1-0. You were at the U.S.-Iran game.
I was.
So give us an idea of what it was like in the stadium and what did you see on the field?
A lot of support for Iran. Their fans definitely came out in numbers. And it was really a tale of two halves. The U.S. really dominated the entire first half. They showed spells not only in that match, but really throughout the group stage of being able to dominate teams. The one difference that they showed in this half as they actually scored a goal, which they've had some trouble doing. So they really pushed and pushed and got the first goal. Pulisic got banged up on that goal, obviously. They almost scored a second. There was a really, really, really close offside call that easily could have made it 2-0 for the U.S., but they looked like a different team in the second half, and so did Iran. Iran came out firing and really obviously needed an equalizer to progress. And it was very tense in the second half. There were a number of instances where, you know, Iran came really close to scoring and just ultimately couldn't put one in. But it was exciting. It was nervous and then a lot of excitement when the final whistle went and obviously the U.S. moved on.
Yeah, perhaps not surprising, really, that it was kind of a pro-Iran crowd, considering where this World Cup is being held.
Yes. The U.S. support, I thought, was okay. I expected more Americans, both in the crowd and really around Doha. That was one thing that we consistently said and thought as the week went on in Doha was – Yeah, we saw a lot of good support for the Americans at the stadium, but really around Doha, did not see a lot of U.S. jerseys, T-shirts, things like that, where you consistently saw American support. So I think the numbers for the U.S. in Qatar were definitely lower than I would have expected.
Interesting. Well, on the field, you know, as you already mentioned, a very similar style of game like the USA Wales game.
Yes.
And is that concerning to you at all? And let me dovetail this into a listener question that we got for the show. There's rumors that surfaced today that Berhalter is going to get his contract renewed by US Soccer. Share your thoughts on
Not happy. I
that.
mean, to like I think Berhalter is kind of the coach, in my opinion, that people didn't expect to go deep into the World Cup. And it's a young team that hasn't been there. And I feel like that's kind of giving him a free pass to fail. And I think people approach this saying he's not the guy to get us to the quarterfinals or the semifinals. And he proved that. So continuing to keep him around. I thought the game plan against the Netherlands was horrible. And you know, we'll talk a little bit about the round of 16 match, but I don't see the benefit when there were already questions and concerns about what he can do, and he didn't really overachieve. They scored two goals, well, three goals in four matches. So it was not, it was great to get out of the group, but I think most of the players were disappointed. I don't think you know, there was a lot of, hey, we did it.
No, look, I'll say the same thing that I said in our last show with Tom. You know, from an American perspective, you know, I know we have a lot of listeners from around the world, and for you and I, who are two Americans who are interested in seeing the game grow here, it didn't feel like what we saw is really going to convince a bunch of kids to go play soccer. If that makes sense, right? Like it was, yes, maybe he put together the tactics based on the team that he had that, you know, helped him get through the group stage, which they should have done, in my opinion, anyways, right? Like we had many discussions about this. Group B was always like a very close call. Like, no, I don't think that was one of the closest groups to call. It was a group that a lot of people didn't know how it was really going to go. Wales completely fell flat on their face, did not have a good showing, and yet we could only manage a 1-1 tie with them. We stepped it up against England, and then Iran, you know. A similar thing, you know, we just kind of came back into our shell a little bit, and then so you know, back to my point, you know, if we really want to see the game grow here, I feel like the excitement that had built up about this young team, you know, and all that didn't really shine through in the end. Like, you know, we just barely scraped by, and then yeah, we got punched in the face against the Netherlands, and so we'll go there now. You know, round of 16 ties, Netherlands versus USA. This is a pretty ugly game if you're an American, if we're being honest. We got completely outmaneuvered tactically, I think. Louis van Gaal came in with a plan. He completely shut down Tyler Adams, who, you know, is that focal point for the US in terms of attacking. So they man marked him out of the game, and that shut us down basically. We couldn't find any sort of joy really wide, and therefore centrally. And so, you know, full credit to them. They came with a game plan. I don't think it helped necessarily that, you know, we have Charles Barkley, you know, talking smack. That clearly riled them up. If you saw
the Memphis clap back though,
Memphis, he did. Yeah. No, he totally did. And the Netherlands did a little bit too. You know, if you saw their pregame the day of the game, they had their little, you know, their little hype video before the game. Yeah. And it was, you know, that sound bite from Barkley, and there's a fake dollar bill on the door to the locker room that had Louis Van Gaal's photo in it. And, you know, in Van Gaal, we trust. Right. And so
we'll talk about some other guarantees as we move down the groups too, because I know you may have already talked about it in the last show, but Canada's another one that might be better just stay silent a little bit before the match.
Yes. 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 Yeah. No, we'll get there. And any other thoughts on the Netherlands USA game? I mean, how do you think this Netherlands team is going to do against Argentina?
Oh, I mean, it's definitely hard to kind of say, given it was a 3-1 finish, but I just never really got the impression that the Netherlands was that much of a better team than the USA. And I know that feels a little weird to say, given they pretty much control the whole game, but you look at how they scored their three goals, right? It's got deep, cut it back into the middle. Nobody marked the guy, and it gets through three guys into the back of net. The first two goals were exactly the same. Yep. The third goal, Dumfries is wide open at the back post, and first time's it. And it's like, I feel like those are preventable goals. Like,
yeah.
I don't think they made some super phenomenal play, and they played well. They deserve to win for sure. But I am concerned about them against Argentina. I am definitely concerned about them against Argentina. They only put two past Qatar. Their performance, they drew against Ecuador. Their performance at the World Cup, in my opinion, has not been as dominant as I thought it would be, given we talked about them a lot coming in and how they're playing really well. I've seen a number of teams that I think look better than the Netherlands, and Argentina is one of them. So I think they are and could be in trouble against Argentina.
Interesting. So even though Argentina dropped that game against Saudi Arabia, you're still high on them.
Yeah, I don't even remember that at this point.
That's fair. No, so I'm kind of the opposite mindset, actually. So for me, you know, I'd kind of pegged the Netherlands as a dark horse in this World Cup, and you know, that they're meeting my expectations at this point in time, if I'm being honest. You know, I think their goal was to navigate through the group stage successfully, and I'm not sure that they went into it thinking they're going to win all three games, but thinking that they were for sure going to get out. And to me, I think the U.S. was a good warm up for them, you know, heading into the Argentina game. So I feel like it's going to be I don't think it's going to be a thrashing. I guess I'll just say that.
Oh, right? I don't either.
Yeah, and the Netherlands, I think, has the ability to go toe-to-toe with Argentina. And we've seen with Argentina, you know, Messi's kind of lifting that team and you know, moving the needle forward. And I think, you know, a lot of that coming into this, the way that they played was different from World Cups in the past, right? We know that, you know, they built a team, more of a team around him versus it just being the Lionel Messi show. Yep. And I think that's paying dividends. I think you have a player like Alexis McAllister who has come in after that first game, and I think he's really made a difference in the team. Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be a really good game. I'm very excited for it. That's probably one of the ones I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah.
Because I think tactically and technically, you know, it's two very gifted teams. And it's just going to be a giant chess match.
Absolutely. So I'm looking forward to talking a little bit more about Argentina when we get down to the Group C conclusion.
Yes. Well, let's go there now.
Well, let's talk England Senegal real quick before we get there, because it was a somewhat forgettable game, but you know, 3-0 England. I feel for Senegal because England scored. Senegal had a number of chances in the first half, and England got a second goal that I was a little bit surprised. There were two additional minutes added at the end of the first half. England regained possession in their own half with, I think, 2 minutes and seven-ish seconds elapsed. And the referee did not blow it dead, and England went down and scored. And I was a little bit surprised that play went on. And I really felt like that second goal just kind of broke Senegal, where it was right before the half. I think they thought they were in, and it was just a quick break. And I really feel like they kind of gave up after that second goal. Did you see anything different? Were you surprised with the scoreline and just how things ended up in so heavily in favor of England?
Wasn't too surprised by the scoreline, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were maybe underestimating England a little bit coming into this, given their form, probably myself included.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, it's clear that they're a talented group of players, and perhaps the most talented group of players that they've had since 66. I think that's when they won, you know. So they have a lot to they have a lot to prove, and their manager does as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this was a step in the right direction, and I wasn't too surprised, I guess, that England came out on top in that one. I was disappointed for Senegal, though. I agree with you. You know, I did expect a little bit more of a contest, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt like you did after that second goal, and then they just kind of laid down a little bit. They lion tamed lion.
Indeed.
So yeah, but you know, again, it's very tough when your leader's out, and you know, I think they had maybe some other injuries as well.
Yeah,
going into that game.
Yeah, they lost Idrissa Gueye on yellow cards as well. So
yeah, exactly.
Missed that one too. So
yeah, so there are some other factors, and you know, they'll live to fight another day, and you know, Senegal will be back. I'm not. You know, this isn't the end of their project.
So. Agreed. Before we move on again, I just wanted to ask your thoughts about another team just in Wales.
Yeah.
Because only Qatar and Canada finished below them in the overall table. They got 1 point, conceded 6 goals, got, you know, beat pretty definitively by England in their final match. And their only goal came from the penalty that they got against the U.S. And so we were talking to some people in Qatar, and probably some biased English fans, but there was not a lot of optimism about Wales. And you know, they were kind of saying they're not going to be back. Were you disappointed with what you saw from Wales, and what do you expect from them going forward?
Yeah. I was. I did expect more. So in that sense, yes, I was disappointed. But you know, when your squad is not rotated very much, mm-hmm. Unless by necessity, you know, it limits, I think, what you can do, right? And I think Wales kind of fell into that. And I think, you know, I saw some people talking about that very thing. And you know, and how that's on the manager. Is this kind of the end of an era for them? I mean, you'd have to think so, right? I mean, they have some youngsters coming through, but are they that same maybe level as like your Bales, your mm-hmm. your Ramseys, your Joe Allens? I'm not sure. You know, I don't think you can really say right now. Right.
Yeah. I think you have to feel like their arrow is probably pointing downwards a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see what they do. To your point, who's up next? And with a lot of these guys leaving, and really this being their last World Cup, what's the future for them? So they're going to be an interesting one to keep track of. But I did not get the sense that there was a lot of optimism about Wales right now.
Yeah, passionate fan group though.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's hop down to Group C. Okay, so going into the last match day here, Saudi Arabia and Mexico is probably in my opinion, the tie of the round. You know, Saudi Arabia had a chance to progress if they could find a result against Mexico. Argentina and Poland, you know, Argentina probably needing some sort of result to really solidify their place, which they got. They, you know, they beat Poland 2-0. Mexico goes on to beat Saudi Arabia 2-1. But this group actually came down to the wire for a little bit.
It did.
It was something else. I think if Saudi Arabia had not scored that goal at the end, we would be seeing, correct me if I'm wrong, but Mexico would have gone through. Is that right?
Poland would have gone through on yellow cards.
On yellow cards, that's right.
Yes, and it was, I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was Krakowiak for Poland had a yellow, was on the field, and had he picked up a second yellow, that red would have counted essentially double, tied it up, and went to a drawing of lots to see who advanced. So, like, everyone had their eyes focused on this one guy. Like, will he pick up a yellow before the end of the game? But Saudi Arabia scored, and Poland ultimately went through on goal difference.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Were you disappointed in the end with the effort that Saudi Arabia put together after that Argentina result? Because I was. That's why I'm asking the question. I thought they had the world at their fingertips.
I think they put everything into that game against Argentina. And I think they were on a huge high after that game. And I think that might have been too much.
Yeah.
Where they lost focus or expected different things. And so, I mean, it was obviously a huge upset against Argentina. And I don't know that they were able to quickly get over that, because I think they played the underdog mindset really well. But after that win, maybe they were thinking, you know, we should beat these other teams now. You know, if we can beat Argentina, we should beat Poland and we should beat Mexico. And it was a great result, but I think the results against Poland and Mexico to me were more what I expected from them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you are right. You know, you always kind of want that fairy tale, I guess. And that's kind of what I was going for. You know, I love those. Yeah. I love those kinds of things. And I mean, all they had to do was beat Mexico. Mexico,
I know.
You know, we could talk about them now, but man, I mean, what a disaster of a World Cup, honestly. Like, I just, you know, as somebody who lives in the CONCACAF region, you know, you want that team to excel for, you know, to show as a show of strength for your region, right? And so, you know, it's good that they got the win, I guess, in the last game. You know, they can kind of go back with a little bit of pride. But on the other hand, you know, tough group, right? Yeah. I mean, Argentina and Poland, as we've seen, you know, no pushovers.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting with how it played out over time, because ultimately what happened was what everybody expected, is that Argentina finished first, Saudi Arabia finished last, and Mexico-Poland was a toss-up. Poland advanced because they beat Saudi Arabia by 2 instead of 1.
Yeah.
So, I think ultimately the results were kind of along the lines of what I expected. I will say that Argentina and Mexico, both their fan support was phenomenal. Where anywhere we went, those were the two countries always. You'd see Argentina, you'd see Mexico. And so that Argentina versus Mexico game, I think was probably, in terms of just overall both teams support, the best that you'll see at the World Cup. I thought it was a great group. Argentina in the end showed that, you know, they were the class of the group and were able to shake off that early defeat and pull through. So there was a lot of drama, but it's crazy that ultimately it kind of ended up how everyone expected.
Yeah. Okay, good. Did you want to mention, you said earlier you want to talk about Argentina for a second?
Yeah, just their fan support was phenomenal. Gotcha. I think really of any country, they had the support of Argentinians. They traveled tremendously. We were at the Argentina-Poland match, and it was a huge Argentinian support. And also a lot of the locals and around the region also support Argentina as well. So all that, I would say, quote unquote, neutral support they got as well. So, you know, great support from the Argentinians as well.
Did you see anything from Mexico or even Saudi Arabia that maybe gets you excited for this next cycle?
Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I think so. I think people aren't really as familiar with their players, as we mentioned in our previous shows, just them being pretty much all local based. And I think they outperformed expectations, even though they did finish bottom of the group for sure. They outperformed expectations, and yeah, really interested to see what they do within the Asian region. And then I would definitely, especially given how many more teams from Asia are going to be at the 26 World Cup, I would be shocked if they're not at the 26 World Cup as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And a name to throw out there would be, I think it's Altan Bakhti, if I'm not mistaken. He's a center back. He's a very young kid. You know, the Martin that we had on the preview show talked a lot about him on his Twitter account over the course of these matches that Saudi Arabia had. And but that's perhaps somebody for listeners to cue into. He had a pretty strong showing this World Cup, did pretty well. So,
yeah.
You know, there seems to be like a move to Europe on the cards for him, if what I'm reading is true.
Perhaps, so. Perhaps a trade for Ronaldo.
There you go. Which he denies. Cool. All right. to Group D then. So Group D, one of the shocks, I think, of the tournament at this point in time. Denmark needing a win to move on, a win against Australia, no less. And they couldn't muster it. They lost to Australia 1-0, which sent Australia through into the round of 16.
Yeah.
And then in the other fixture on the same day, Tunisia comes up with a 1-0 win against France. So, yeah. Thoughts, what was going, were you
gonna,
at either of these games?
I'm going to throw that Tunisia France match out just because of who France put on the field.
Well, this is true.
I mean, Tunisia still got the job done. The Australia-Denmark game was very exciting. And we talked a lot about Denmark, and they just really disappointed pretty much start to finish. Only getting 1 point out of this group, I think. You know, I'm not sure what went wrong with them, but they had aspirations of going pretty far in this tournament and to finish last in the group, 3 points below the third place team. Just a tremendously underwhelming performance from them. They scored 0 goals against Tunisia and Australia combined.
It's insane. I mean, going into this World Cup, you wouldn't have never, ever, ever thought that. So yeah. I'm still unsure of why exactly that happened. I don't know, because, you know, we heard, you know, in our preview show, we heard that their coach plans meticulously. Mm-hmm. You know, was this over planning, oversight on his part then, maybe, or just I mean, it's crazy. And they just could not find goals. They just could not find any goals. I think, you know, their center back got the only goal that they had at the whole tournament, which is Christensen, right? And really shocking.
Australia played very well. They played well in the knockout round. I mean, they're a team that for as late as they left it to even qualify for the World Cup, they played really well. They were tough, they were competitive, they got the win against Denmark, they got, you know, a win against Tunisia as well, finished on 6 points, and they really with against Argentina had a chance at the end to tie it up. And you know, there might not have been as much optimism heading into the tournament about Australia, but they really played their hearts out. And they're a team that I think relies on their fans, and the Australian support was great, and they will give you everything they have. And I think, you know, we saw the best of what Australia can do, and you know, they pushed Argentina as far as they could, and came very close to tying it up at the end. So you know, that's something I think with Australia that you always see is just, you know, you're going to get their best.
Yeah. And some, you know, there's some exciting talent that's coming through on that.
Absolutely.
You know, down in the land down under. So, yeah, maybe one to watch, right? Like, I was not saying that coming into this tournament at all. You know, we thought it was kind of the opposite, right? We thought, you know, they were kind of on a downhill, on a downhill turn, but, you know, and the tactics were not always pretty, but you know, they got the job done, and that's, you know, that's what matters. So
it's been a little tough because of COVID. They're a team that when you look back at the schedule and just kind of how the Asian Cup qualifiers played out, and they qualified early, they qualified out of the World Cup final rounds early. They didn't play a ton of matches. Mm-hmm. And you know, we mentioned they played New Zealand in the run up, and they were among the more cautious nations really getting back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
And so I think that may have affected them somewhat in terms of really just getting up to speed, playing at full strength. And I think, you know, this tournament certainly showed what they're capable of.
Yeah. No, I agree. So that meant, as you already mentioned, Argentina, Australia was one round of 16 game. And then, we had, France, Poland. Yep. with France, I would say making a, you know, a clear statement, in that game against Poland, didn't really put up much, in my opinion.
Agreed. That was our last match. And Kylian Mbappe was just unbelievable. He scored two incredible goals. We thought the first one was amazing. The second one, he was even better. He was just unstoppable. Poland had no answer for him at all.
Yeah. Yep. No, France looking really good. Perhaps they can make history by repeating, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. A tough quarterfinal matchup against England. I think, you know, there's obviously some historical rivalry there. So expect fireworks, I would say.
I think that one can go either way. England's playing well. France is playing well.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great quarterfinal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. all right. I think that kind of covers group C and D. So we'll head down to E and F. Let's start with E. So this group, also a very thrilling group. We kind of talked about it leading into this World Cup. We figured that there would be some sort of upset in this group, and lo and behold, it happened.
Yes.
It took some monumental efforts, but the last match day, Japan
and some VAR.
And some VAR. Yes. Yes. Some VAR. Japan beating Spain 2-1. I guess you could say a controversial call in that game. And then Germany beats Costa Rica 4-2, but because Japan won, Japan and Spain go through, and actually Japan goes through in the top spot in the group. So Germany bounced out. Costa Rica, perhaps not horribly surprising, but you know, Costa Rica made something of this group, you know, and we talked, you know, we talked a little bit about that with Eddie, you know, given, you know, they had the opportunity to kind of play spoiler here, and they lived up to that for sure.
Yeah, and they took the lead against Germany with about, I don't know, 20-25 minutes to play. They led Germany 2-1. And as the results stood at that point in time, both Spain and Germany were about to be out.
Yeah.
And Germany got it together and ultimately won. But because Japan was beating Spain, Japan was topping the group on 6 points. Spain and Germany were both on 4 points. Spain had such a massive lead in goal differential because of what they did to Costa Rica. Germany couldn't do anything. They needed another 4 goals basically to get out of the group, and that was not going to happen. So with Japan beating Spain, Germany was essentially eliminated no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was a thrilling finish, though. It was definitely one of those where you're watching the other match, you're seeing what's going on. Germany scores, Costa Rica scores, Costa Rica scores again, Japan scores. It was one of those great, great finishes where I think all that happened as this went on was people realizing that a three-team group in a World Cup is a terrible idea.
Yes. Oh, it absolutely is. Let's not have that, please. No, yeah. Japan just, you know, their coach making some really good tactical changes to shift, you know, the game in their favor. And not only did he do it once, but he did it twice.
Yes.
You know, against the two heavyweights in the group. And really, you know, I think helping to put Asia on the map here.
Agreed.
You know, it's fantastic to see, you know, a team like Japan be able to contend, you know, with a team that I think a lot of people would say, you know, on any given day would usually take the win. But, you know, I think this says a lot about Asian football and the upward trajectory that it's on, you know, and it's a positive thing. It's a healthy thing, I think, for the game to see, you know, a nation like Japan, a team like Japan, be able to progress in this group.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess kind of on the flip side of that. Oh, go ahead.
No, they to come from behind to win and beat both Spain and Germany.
It's incredible.
It's incredible, and you know they lost to Costa Rica 1-0, and I think we're talking a little bit. It's like, you know, they kind of like playing from behind. They want to play, and you could see, like, you know, when they were behind and needed to get forward and get goals, like it was exciting. Like it was really exciting to watch Japan, and they're a really talented team, and I think we saw that. And I was not surprised to see them get out of the group. I was definitely optimistic about them. I think there was a lot of kind of, you know, we put some predictions out there, and like, how could you not pick Spain and Germany? And it this one always felt to me like just a group where something was going to happen, where it wasn't just going to be straightforward.
Yeah. No, I agree. Totally agree. And it played out that way. So it makes it all the more enjoyable, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the bottom two in this group real fast. So despite both teams going out, you know, I want to talk about Costa Rica for a second because, you know, for me, I actually saw a lot of promise.
Yeah.
You know, I think the coach got some things wrong tactically. I think he got some things wrong with who he took. You know, there's an old guard for Costa Rica that's, you know, I think now will be done. And I think you have some hungry young players for Costa Rica that want to do something, and we're excited to be at the World Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you saw those players, you know, take the field, that's really what tended to make the difference, I think, for them, you know, getting that win over Japan and then, you know, taking the lead against Germany. So all is not lost, right? I think that there's a lot to be said for Costa Rica and the role that they played at this World Cup and what they can do going forward.
It was a weird time for, I think, for Costa Rica, just as you mentioned, kind of in that transition period. We talked about Wales a little bit earlier, and I view Costa Rica as a little bit different because I do think Costa Rica's got good young talent, and you know, it felt a little bit like they were holding on to some of the older players. And I think as the tournament went on, they started to adjust and get better. And you could see that, you know, when they beat Japan and when they took the lead against Germany, they really started to figure things out a little bit more. And like, okay, you know, this is really what we need to do as a team going forward. And I agree. I think they showed a lot of promise. I think a number of their young players they're a really young team. There are a lot of players that are, you know, under 21 that I think have high expectations for Costa Rica. So it kind of felt like a tournament where there weren't really any expectations. And I think if that's what you believe, that there weren't really any expectations on this team, you could certainly make the argument that they exceeded those expectations.
Sure.
Getting a win and having a pretty respectable performance against Germany. Ultimately, you know, Germany knew that they needed to win, and just, you know, throwing all kinds of guys forward at the end of the match. You know, it's not surprising that it ended up as it did, but I think Costa Rica, with the exception of the first game against Spain, because that was just, it was just a horrible performance. The last two matches, they certainly figured it out. And I think they're going to be a good team at CONCACAF going forward.
Yeah.
Again, just like I was talking about Saudi Arabia earlier, USA, Canada, and Mexico are already in, and CONCACAF gets another three spots. Costa Rica is going to take one of them.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. They're definitely, in my opinion, after those top three, the fourth best team in CONCACAF. You can make the argument for Panama, but I think Costa Rica, with where they're at, I'm expecting them to be back and stronger than they were here.
Yep. No, I agree. You know, looking now at Germany, we heard today, there's an announcement today from the German Federation.
Hansi's back.
that they're keeping Hansi, you know, they're putting their trust in him, you know, kind of going into the next Euros. So he's sticking around, you know, and I think that's fair. You know, I think this was a good experience for him to have. I think it was a good experience for the team to have. You know, Kai Havertz really made a difference, you know, when he came on, especially against Costa Rica. You know, perhaps that's a player that, you know, they'll start to build around, maybe. You know, so, you know, I think for Germany, you just kind of lick your wounds in this one and look on to the next one and realize, you know, this isn't a disaster. You know, this is a learning experience, and chalk it up to that.
Yeah. And I think all of that is totally fair as well. You know, we're numbers guys, and you look at the numbers, and Germany arguably was one of the best teams at the World Cup, according to the underlying metrics. But then again, you know, so was Canada. And so it's a tough one for me, because they beat Costa Rica. You know, they got the job done. They drew against Spain, and they blew a lead against Japan. And when you do that and you only get 4 points, you're not going to make it out of the group. And so I think you have to go back to that Japan game and see, okay, well, what went wrong?
Yeah.
And I don't think they know. I think they think, you know, Japan grabbed a couple lucky goals and went away with the win. So I don't know. Germany, even coming into this tournament for me, was not on the same level as a number of the other teams. When you look at who's in the quarterfinals, your England's, your France, you know, Brazil, Argentina, Netherlands, Germany was not on that level for me coming into the tournament. So I ultimately didn't expect them to progress that far anyway. But they're a weird one because, again, the numbers say they're good, but they're out of the group stage here. They were out of the group stage in 2018. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is for Germany. They have a lot of individually talented players, but something seems to be missing from that team to really bring it all together and be successful. I don't know how I feel about Hansi staying on. I don't know if that's a good thing for them because they haven't been successful. And if they feel he's that guy, great. But I don't think Germany is on the same level as a number of the other top teams right now.
If they didn't bring him in and brought in somebody else, though, do you think that would solve the issue? Because for me, the word that I would say describes them at this moment in time is stale.
Yeah.
Like, they just feel really stale to me.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Like, there's talented players there, like you said, but they haven't been able to bring it together. And the talented players that are there are not on that same level as you would say, as you said, right? Not your Brazil, it's not your Argentina. Like,
yeah.
So it's
yeah. And so to that point, I will say the guy who really impressed me at the World Cup was not even a starter for them in Niklas Füllkrug. And he's had a great season in the Bundesliga thus far. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He scored a number of goals. Why not start him? To me, it's like he's shown that he's a good player.
Yeah.
And let him get more minutes. Let him do more. Maybe against Spain, you don't wait to score until late in the second half. Maybe you get that one or two goals earlier on and it changes your fortunes. And so I agree. I think stale is a good word because I think they have the talent. They just need to figure out the right combination, and they haven't done that yet.
Yeah. All right, let's move to Group F. What a fun group.
It was. It really was.
Croatia, Belgium, Canada, Morocco. So in the final match day, you had Croatia against Belgium. You had Canada against Morocco. At this point in time, Canada's already out,
yep,
more or less. And Morocco goes into this game with an opportunity to top the group, right? And it's just incredible scenes, and you're going to speak to it, I think, here in a second. But we'll just – so Morocco ends up beating Canada 2-1. Morocco looking very good. Belgium and Croatia end up drawing. That knocks Belgium out.
Yep.
And Croatia goes through. So Morocco goes through in first place, Croatia in second. And Brandon, take it away.
Oh, yeah. I think that atmosphere, we were at Althumama Stadium for Morocco, Canada. I don't think it was actually on a pod that we recorded, but we had a conversation. I don't know if you remember, maybe 2 months ago or so, where we didn't have tickets. And I said to you, we could go to one of these two games. We can go to Croatia versus Belgium or Canada versus Morocco, which we go to. You're like, that is a tough question. I don't know. And we actually couldn't even get tickets to Croatia, Belgium. That was the one, like, we could not get tickets. So, like, all right, we'll go to the Canada-Morocco game. And it was awesome. It was awesome. The Moroccan support was crazy. They were just nonstop the entire 90 minutes. I unintentionally ended up somehow in the Moroccan section. And we decided heading into the match, because we knew that Canada was out, our neutral fandom was kind of up for grabs. And I think we initially intended to support Canada. And we said, all right, we'll support CONCACAF and go for Canada. Once they were eliminated, we just decided, look, let's get on board with Morocco. It's either them or nobody. So, we got the Moroccan gear and the shirts and the scarves, and We were really excited for Morocco, and it was just a phenomenal atmosphere. Bourian made a huge mistake almost immediately. Morocco went up 1-0 in the fourth minute, and the place just went insane. It was nonstop for the full 90 minutes, singing, cheering, Canada got one back, which made things a little bit nerve-wracking, but ultimately Morocco pulled through, and the fans were just nonstop with filming Instagram live videos, cheering. You know, it was really a night to remember, and it was definitely exciting to be in the stadium.
Yeah, the Moroccan fans, you know, I think everybody's maybe, you know, encaptured with them right now because their enthusiasm is just spilling out of the TV screens. Yeah. Like, it's so fun to watch. And it just makes me think about, you know, if Morocco had gotten one of the World Cup bids.
Yeah.
You know, what an amazing scene that would have been, you know. Yeah. And perhaps it will happen for them in the future. I hope it does, because this gets me excited to host a World Cup in, you know, in a place like Morocco. I think it'd be phenomenal. So it's really, really great, really exciting, and the team is performing well. You know, the coach, he's done an amazing job with this team. You know, to beat Belgium, to beat Canada, to tie Croatia.
Yeah.
You know, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, and to give Africa two teams, you know, into the round of 16 it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. You know, Doha became Casablanca with, you know, during these games. And, so it's, you know, they're a really fun team to watch, and we had kind of pegged them as a team to watch during this World Cup. So hopefully everybody listened, you know, you know, patting myself a little bit on the back, feeling very vindicated for picking them to get out of this group with Croatia in our preview show.
Absolutely.
You know, but you know, everybody seems to know their role in this team. You know, and the fans are obviously giving them that extra dimension. You know, I think that's pretty clear from the game against Spain, which we'll talk about in just a second. You know, and so it's just exciting. It's just exciting. You know, they're a football mad country in any ways, and this just is almost like sweet justification.
Yeah. And I think they can keep going. I mean, obviously it's going to be tough against Portugal, but again, the support from the Moroccans creates a totally different atmosphere, and it doesn't feel like a neutral match. It feels like it's a home match for Morocco with the support. And it really has been awesome to see them progress. You know, we mentioned numerous times in our preview shows and other things, like, they are our number one African team in our rankings by far. It's not Senegal, even though they're the African champions. Morocco, over the last 3 years, the only countries in the world that have taken more points from their matches than Morocco are Brazil and Argentina. So Morocco is a very good team. They've been a very good team, and now they're finally getting that recognition, which is great.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that Morocco Spain game for a second, because there's a few things I want to mention. First of all, tactically, like, what a setup. I mean, they had this 4-4-2, almost like a 4-1-4-1. And they were so tight defensively. Yeah. They were just so tight. So Spain couldn't pass through their lines, right? And they would shift. Everybody would shift. It's like a machine. They just shift. You know, when the ball went out wide, all the lines, everybody would shift together, and it just, Spain could not find a way through. They really couldn't. And there's one, you know, the person that impressed me the most. I mean, there was a lot of impressive. You know, everybody played the heck out of themselves. You know, for Morocco during that game, but the guy that impressed me the most was Amrabat. I mean, what a game from him. I mean, he first of all, he, you know, he really shut down Busquets, and second of all, he just kept going. And I'm pretty sure coming into this World Cup, he's like nursing an injury. So he's, you know, he's getting like shots before every single game so he can play. Like, I mean, this is just like, this is what it means to them, though. You know, like, it's just next, it's next level stuff, and I freaking love it. Like, I'm eating this up.
Yeah, they are definitely the one team I think left that's really like a dark horse at this point.
Yeah,
all your traditional powerhouses, but
and then there's Morocco.
Morocco is still going, and they're in the quarterfinals, and they're definitely a team that I think is good enough to keep going.
I don't disagree, actually. You know, I think you know their backline is strong if it stays together. You know, they put a monumental effort into that game against Spain. They'll have some time to recover and between the Portugal match.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully they're able to do it. Hopefully they've got a good team of doctors and trainers, you know, with them that is allowing them to do that, because they're definitely going to need it, right? Like Saiz, like that dude, I'm pretty sure he pulled his hammy and then he still go back on for the last 10 minutes. Like, this is what it means to them, right? Like, it's unbelievable. Aguerd, he had a phenomenal game as well. You know, after performing very well in France, it's just, you know, you look at this team front to back and there's talent on that team, right? Ziyech, obviously, you know, although I will say this is the first, kind of the first game that I noticed from him. You could kind of tell that he's a little bit out of form, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's played pretty well up to that game. Yeah. And he played well in that game, to be fair, right? Like defensively, I think when he plays for Chelsea, he doesn't even defend. Yeah. Right. But for Morocco, like, he knows he's got to do it. Right. Yeah. And, but you know, there were just a few passes that he attempted to make that I was kind of like, oh man, I think, you know, if he was maybe more in form, you know, he'd connect those passes. So, you know, there's a lot to, you know, to be enthralled with this team. I've been enthralled with this team for some time.
Yes.
I feel like I should stop talking now. I'm just going on and on and on because I just, it's just phenomenal. It's just phenomenal.
It is. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other teams in Group F. I love talking about Morocco.
Let's do it.
Want to cover some others. So let's start with Canada. 0 points. They had more XG than their opponents did at the tournament.
Isn't that something?
I am disappointed. I expected more. I didn't expect them to necessarily get out of the group. I expected them to at least get something by way of points. I think the initial match against Belgium was harsh, and really once they got eliminated against Croatia, they didn't have a ton to play for, but I think they showed well. I think most people, you know, we've talked about Canada and had a number of conversations around them. I think most felt that they didn't expect them to have a huge showing this year and have it be a little more focused towards the 2026 cycle. But I was still disappointed. What did you think of Canada?
I guess I wasn't disappointed only because I kind of figured that would be the case. But I guess that's kind of my thoughts. Like, I wasn't really expecting a whole lot more. Yeah. I'm glad that they were able to find some goals. I'm glad that Fonzie got the first goal for them in this World Cup. You know, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, right? Like, this is you know, this is obviously a project that they have going on. They've proved that they can go toe to toe with, you know, a lot of great teams. They've proved that they can run the mill here in CONCACAF. What's next for them? I'm not sure. I guess I would agree with you. It was a little disappointing. I thought maybe we might see, it would have been nice if they could have gotten, you know, some points. That's kind of my thoughts, I guess, on Canada there. Yeah.
So the other group in the match, the other match in the group, excuse me, was a 0-0 shocker, I think, between Croatia and Belgium.
Why do you say shocker?
because of how many opportunities Belgium had to not make it nil-nil. Lukaku
Lukaku,
just unbelievable miss after miss after miss.
he was
And that
not
was the
happy with
margin.
himself.
If any one of those goes in, Belgium's still in and Croatia's out. So do you think Belgium's done? Or do you think this was just a horrible showing?
Well, their coach is gone. He stepped
He
down
is.
after that game. Roberto Martinez. Is Belgium done? I don't think they're done. I think they still have a lot of talent that's coming up and coming through. Like a player like Trossard would be one that I would, mention. I just think that people need to start to temper their expectations for the team. I don't know if they're a world champion type team, right? We've said that about them multiple times now. They have not been able to meet that expectation. And so, maybe it's time to drop that storyline, right?
I can't help but wonder also, 'cause I like they got a win against Canada they probably didn't deserve.
Yep, that's
I
true.
think
No,
they
that's
got
really true.
a draw against Croatia that they probably did not deserve.
That's true too.
And I think they deserve to lose to Morocco. So I'm a little torn on them because I think they got a little bit unlucky. And I don't know what conversation we're having about them. If, let's say, Lukaku scores two of those opportunities that he has, and they beat Croatia 2-0, and then they advance and they play Japan, and now they're in the quarterfinals, and it was that close for
Yeah, it
them.
was really close.
So I don't know. I agree. I think they're probably not world champion caliber, but I would think that writing them off at this point is probably a little premature. I think they're still a really good team.
So Euro, when's the next Euros? 2024.
Yeah, they'll be there.
Oh
They'll
yeah,
be
they'll be
there,
there.
and they'll be contending, I think. I think they'll be in the knockout rounds and, quarterfinal, threatening team again. I don't expect them to really fall off. But I don't know. Croatia, again, I've been a little disappointed with Croatia, and they're in the quarterfinals. So we haven't really talked about that Croatia-Japan match yet, but
Let's do it, yeah.
Belgium with against Belgium, they drew nil-nil. Against Morocco, they drew nil-nil. And they went down against Canada and came back and bagged four goals. They went to penalties with Japan. I've not really been super impressed with Croatia. But they are still there. And now they can impress me by beating Brazil if they want to. But yeah, I was disappointed to see Japan knocked out on penalties.
So no shades of 2018 for you.
I don't think so.
No, I kind of agree, and I think this is the end of the line for them. I can't see them getting past Brazil. I rewatched that Brazil game earlier today. And if Brazil comes out and plays like they did against South Korea, I think it's going to be a step too far. And yeah, Croatia, though, I mean, on the flip side, we do have to give them credit, I think, for getting that far. I, speaking of that game, I guess I was kind of disappointed a little bit in Japan. Their penalties were horrendous. I don't know if they didn't think it was going to get to that point and maybe didn't prepare. I'd have a hard time believing that. Yeah, I mean, it's fine margins. It's very fine margins that these games come down to, right? And
Absolutely.
so, what can Croatia do against Brazil? I don't know. I mean, they're gonna come. They'll come with a plan, that's for sure.
I think of all the quarterfinal matchups, that would be the one I'd be the most surprised by if Croatia beat Brazil.
I think a lot of people are in your in your same boat, including myself. I have a hard time seeing that.
They were in the final. They were in the final in 2018. They're in the quarterfinals now. I mean, you definitely, I agree. You have to give them credit for getting as far as they have.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Let's talk some Group G, because I don't think this group played out exactly how I expected it to. One team in particular was super disappointing for me. In Serbia.
Yeah.
And they ultimately finished with 1 point. They were up 3-1 on Cameroon and blew that.
Yeah.
They were up on Switzerland and blew that. Were you surprised by Serbia's performance?
I really was. I really was. You know, we talked a lot about them, I feel like, coming into this World Cup, and about how we, you know, our expectations was for them to finally get out of the group. And
yeah,
those ghosts live on.
Just
really, really disappointing. I thought for sure that they'd see this through, especially now, you know, that we've seen, again, jumping ahead a little bit, but, you know, we saw the Portugal-Switzerland result in the round of 16, and Switzerland just didn't offer a ton. And
there were some
reasons for that, which we'll get to in a second, but
Serbia finished ahead of Portugal in qualifying. Serbia qualified directly.
Yeah, exactly.
And Portugal had to go through the playoffs. So
yeah, I don't know what it is, but there's some sort of, I don't want to call it a curse, but there's something going on that when they get to a big stage like this, they seem to struggle, and it's disappointing for sure. Yeah.
Their issue was really conceding goals. You look up and down the table, Costa Rica allowed 11. And nobody else allowed more than Serbia at eight. And they just couldn't. Their back line was a problem. We were at the Cameroon match, and they went up 3-1, and we thought they were going to run away with it. And they were horrible at the back, frankly. We could see that, you know, Cameroon, once they kind of figured out, like, okay, here's how we need to attack, they were vulnerable. And it was obvious just watching them that was their weakness. And so they have a lot of talented players, you know, Milinkovic, Savic, Tadic, Mitrovic, obviously.
Right.
You know, they have a lot of Vlahovic. They have a lot of talented players in the midfield and up front.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for them to become a truly elite team, something has to happen at the back, because they were horrible.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. The Cameroon match was like shook the earth.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody saw that coming. You know, and so, let's see what they can do, you know, heading into the Euros, I guess. You know, because they're going to have to find a way to sort that out. And a little disappointing from them. Let's talk about Cameroon, though. You know, to get that draw, and then, you know, they got a 1-0 win over Brazil, kind of the second team of Brazil. So I don't know if you want to throw that result away as well or not.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm a little bit annoyed at that, because it's going to mess with my rankings, and you know, those types of things. You want to throw them out, but it happened. They beat Brazil, and they should be proud of that. We had some numbers that, other than Argentina, I think Belgium, and I believe Peru, Brazil hadn't lost to someone other than those three teams since like 2014. And Cameroon got it done. And yes, Brazil didn't have their number ones, but it's still very good players from Brazil that Cameroon was able to get a result against. So they played really well. I think they started slow. They obviously lost the first match to Switzerland. But they came back and they fought, and you know, they ended up with a zero goal differential in a group with Brazil, Switzerland, and Serbia.
And that's pretty impressive.
I think there's definitely something to be said for that. They really played their hearts out as well, and showed some fight when they were down.
Yeah. Did not think that we would see that from Cameroon in this World Cup. That
yes.
That totally threw me for a loop. Okay, let's talk about Switzerland then. Yes. So, you know, Craig, when we had the preview show, you know, he was pretty high on, you know, Switzerland, which he would be. And,
yeah,
you know, he kind of proved us wrong. You know, this Switzerland team found a way to progress out of the group. And, you know, they ended up facing Portugal in the round of 16. Maybe we'll save that for just a second. But yeah, I mean, for me, the fact that they found a way to maneuver themselves out of this group, especially since they took a loss to Brazil.
And they went down 2-1 to Serbia in that final match. I kind of thought, you know, once Serbia took the lead,
that it was over. Yeah.
And it was not only was it not over, it totally flipped in the opposite direction. So kind of interesting that had Serbia held on to win 2-1, it would have been Cameroon that went through and not Serbia.
Yeah.
On goal difference, because Serbia was so far behind. So but yeah, Switzerland, I think, you know, they're what I expected. I think they're a good, not great team.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, getting that win against Serbia was enough for them. And, you know, they definitely deserve to progress out of the group.
There must be something in that Alpine milk.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Hop Swiss. Brazil. So we have to talk about Brazil, right? And for me, I am so high on this team right now. I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm loving the dancing. I'm loving the team camaraderie. I'm loving the head juggles in the middle of a match. I'm loving the bicycle kicks.
The coach faking a limp with the walking stick celebration with the players.
Yes, all of that. I mean, it's extraordinary. Like, so listeners, you have to understand. So I got into the game right before. Well, really, it was in 2006, but I didn't get to see a whole lot of that World Cup. So 2010 was really my first exposure to World Cup, right? And so I have not really had the opportunity to embrace a Brazil team like the Brazil teams of old, right? Like Samba style, right? I've just heard rumors. And I've seen, you know, I've heard, not rumors, but, you know, I've heard the stories. That's what I meant to say. So, you know, for me to be able to kind of finally see that, and I guess I should you know, I watch a lot of Serie A football in Brazil, so, you know, I've seen the flair and I've seen the style and, you know, all that, but in a Brazil team itself, you know, this is very exciting for me. So, you know, I'm loving what they're bringing to the table. I haven't seen anything, honestly, even though they lost to Cameroon, I haven't seen anything that has changed my mind about Brazil winning this World Cup. I think they are the strongest team here, and I'm excited to see what's I'm excited to see the next couple games for them.
Yeah,
you know,
to me, they're playing just a completely different game than everyone else is playing. Some of just the ball control, the passing, the vision. You mentioned the juggling and different, you know, things that they do, and just some of the things they see and some of the balls they play are just unbelievable. You don't see anyone else doing anything like that, and it is really exciting to watch. I think they're gonna win it. They're definitely my pick. The one thing that I think makes me a little concerned about Brazil is just you have different periods that they can go stretches of time without getting goals. And I think you look at maybe the second half against South Korea, and sure, they were up by a lot. You know, they took their foot off the gas a little bit. But they don't, you know, when you look at the results against Switzerland and Serbia, they won by a combined 3-0. And, you know, three goals from that team over the course of two games, you would expect more from them. And that's the only thing that makes me a little bit concerned about them is, will they have some of those lapses? Because I think, you know, anyone that watched them play that first half against South Korea, if they play that way for 90 minutes, they're not losing anybody. Yeah. Like that's nobody is going to beat a Brazil team playing like that.
Yeah.
And so I think it just comes down to, can they put that effort forth for 90 minutes, or, you know, is there an opportunity for someone else to come in and take them down? So I don't know. I expect them to win. I think that when you see them at their best, they are clearly the best team in the world. But it has been fun. It's really been fun watching them and just seeing some of the goals they've scored. It just, we were watching the Korea match, was on the plane on the way back, and just every goal, we were just like, oh my God, each one was better than the next.
Yeah.
And you couldn't believe some of these things. So it's just a really exciting and fun team to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sets up, you know, I know we've already talked about it, but, you know, your point actually raises another interesting discussion in my mind. You know, Croatia, who hasn't seemed, you know, that great so far, you know, I think they're probably going to plan on packing it in and forcing Brazil to try to break them down.
I would agree.
And so we'll see. You know, this is, I don't want to say the first real test, because I think Switzerland and Serbia are good teams, and Cameroon. But you know, I guess it, you know, it doesn't in the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many goals you score. It just matters if you win.
Absolutely.
So we'll see if they could do it. Yes. Okay. Group H. This group was finally poised going into the last match day as well. Portugal basically already through. So it kind of came down to one of Korea, South Korea, Uruguay, or Ghana.
Yeah.
Right. And Uruguay knew they had to win in the grudge match, the rematch against Ghana. They got the win, but it wasn't enough. Korea just, again, very similar to Japan, you know, making some substitutions, some tactical changes, and then finding two quick goals.
Yeah.
You know, to well, actually, I guess that's not true. They found a goal in the first half, and then they got another one in the second half. But and that punched their ticket into the next round, where ultimately, you know, they ended up losing against Brazil, which we've kind of already touched on. But, you know, if you're South Korean or rooting for South Korea, you know, you have to be really proud, right? And for Asia as a whole, the third team from Asia getting into the round of 16, that's never happened before. So, I mean, that's remarkable. It's great for Asia.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were at the South Korea Portugal game, and we kind of felt we're due for a late winner here. And another one, you know, the Korean support was fantastic. We were in a relatively mixed crowd, but with a number of Koreans, and when they scored that winner in the 91st, it was just electric. It was, you know, the whole Korean team was fired up. They needed the win. They needed to beat Portugal to give themselves a chance.
Yep.
And then they needed help from Uruguay as well, or Ghana, depending on how that played out. But it was just a very exciting win. The fans were going wild. They got the win. And then we were kind of standing in the crowd and doing what the players were doing, because the Ghana-Uruguay game somehow ended up across both halves with something like 15 minutes of extra time. So the Korean match finished almost a full 10 minutes before the other one did. So everyone was watching and waiting. And once they had the final whistle and Uruguay won 2-0 and Korea was through, you know, just people went wild. It was really cool. Everyone was just kind of hanging out in the stadium waiting to see what would happen. The players were in midfield streaming it. And it was just a really cool environment. And again, you know, don't move to three team groups at the World Cup, because things like this will not happen again. But it was a really exciting time for Korea, and to see them progress and come back and beat Portugal was really cool.
Did you stick around to watch kind of the players?
We did.
What was that like?
It was awesome. Everyone was just nervous and watching, and nobody knew what was going on. I actually was able to get a stream on my phone and had a bunch of people huddled around my phone in the stands. So there was probably maybe 8 or 10 people just kind of huddled around my phone watching the conclusion, and the players were at midfield. Everyone that was a Korean supporter stayed in the stadium and waited until the other game went final so they could celebrate with the players.
For me, seeing the scenes of, Son and the other players breaking down, that was emotional. And
Absolutely.
that's one of the things that I enjoy the most about international football and events like this, is again, just how much it means and to represent your country and it's just incredible, and I was super happy for them, and based on how they played, it was really deserved. I felt like, I thought South Korea, played pretty well, and they do have a talented team, and even though they kind of got the rub against Brazil, there's a lot for them to be proud of in this tournament, and
For sure.
yeah, happy for
They're
them.
a good team. I definitely came away seeing them play, thinking that they're a really good team. And we talked about Australia a little bit and Japan. To me, I think Korea's best team that I saw, and maybe you can make the argument for Japan, and nothing against Australia, but I think they're probably the best Asian team, based on what we saw. Totally would understand others thinking some of the other teams might be a little bit better, but they just look like a team that's getting better. They've got a lot of good young talent there, and I expect them to continue to be a real threat on the world stage for sure.
No, I agree. For Uruguay, switching gears here, for Uruguay, though,
Yeah,
it has to
let's talk
be
about them.
has to be disappointing, right? I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I'm a big fan of Uruguay, and I'm glad they got a win under their belt, in the end, but I did expect more from them coming into this, and it goes back to, I think, to that Korea game. I think that was a bit of a surprise result for many, myself included. I thought Uruguay would take that game, but they didn't. And yeah, there's a clear level of talent in the Uruguay team. I think a lot of people are happy to see Suarez gone, maybe gone now. It's not that I'm not, I guess. I'm not, because I guess I don't have that grudge against him, I guess, and to see him breaking down in tears, was interesting, given, his history and whatnot. I don't know. It just Uruguay just didn't seem to come together, and kind of when they did, it was too late. So it's got, I'd say it's disappointing for a team that had the best squad reveal video
Yeah,
out of
for
any of
sure.
them, in my opinion. It was yeah, it was a disappointing World Cup.
I like you, I was for Uruguay coming into the tournament. Their antics in the final match really rubbed me the wrong way. And I think the whole match against Ghana just reeked of karma. Like, they're out against Ghana. They needed, looking at where the final table was, they needed one goal in the last 50 minutes against Ghana, and they couldn't get it. And they blamed the referees, called a penalty. Valverde was mocking the referee in his face. He probably should have been red carded, frankly. Cavani punched a VAR machine. Jimenez elbowed a FIFA official in the head. Suarez crying. It just the whole thing reeked of karma, and they were sore losers. by far the biggest of any team that was eliminated. You know, it was everyone's fault but their own. And they needed one goal in the final 50 minutes against Ghana to progress. Yeah. That's all they needed. And they didn't get it. And it's nobody else's fault but their own.
Yeah, no, you raise very fair points. And to be honest, I had put those images out of my head. So you raise very fair points. And yeah, that's not a proud moment, I don't think, for Uruguay or for really shouldn't be for any of those players. I mean, that's baby behavior and not becoming of a professional athlete, you know, and obviously it's the heat of the moment, but that's no excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. So
yeah. So I think, you know, for this tournament, they just didn't get it together. But you know, they're a team that, yes, some of the older guys, it might be their final go at it. But they're also a team that we've talked about a lot, and definitely expect them to be competitive. And there are a lot of good young players from Uruguay too. So. You know, hopefully across the board, they learn from being at the World Cup, you know, choosing the right players and ultimately some of the behavior that, you know, just didn't look good. Hopefully they learn from that and, you know, we'll see. But it's not the first time Uruguay has done things like that either. So
this is true. From a tactical point of view, you know, they came in the first two games way too timid. Yeah. You know, starting Vecino, probably not the right decision. You know, they needed to put maybe a more creative player in there. You know, somebody who's gonna help Valverde. You know, there's some other things that maybe we could go into, but that's maybe the obvious one for me. You know, he just didn't deliver. Enough, and you saw when they made some changes, including taking him out, that's kind of when, you know, they looked a lot better. So
yeah,
anyways, for what it's worth. Okay, we should talk briefly about Ghana.
Yeah.
Ghana exceeded my expectations.
Yes,
they did. Otto has said he's not staying on. He's already basically stepped down. So he will not be continuing to coach Ghana. But what did you think of Ghana?
I will not reiterate my feelings on Ghana, but I think they got what they wanted to get out of it, is that they brought in players that would get goals and they... You know, I thought they played some exciting matches. Like, I really enjoyed watching Ghana, and it'll be interesting to see if they continue down that path of kind of finding players with Ghanaian ability that they could bring in, because it seems like they're able to score goals, and they're kind of all out approach, you know, gets that result, but you're also going to concede goals. So I didn't hate the approach. I think, especially coming into a group that was as strong with Portugal, Uruguay, and South Korea, you know, I don't hate the approach. I enjoyed watching them play, but they're not at the level of talent that the other teams are at. And, you know, I think they still have work to do to get there, but I think they've set the right foundation to put those wheels in motion.
Let's talk about Portugal. Pretty good show against Switzerland. I don't know what else you could say, obviously, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, it was a thrashing.
The big storyline, benching Ronaldo, but in my opinion, and I was telling this to some of my coworkers, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with this, but I actually think Portugal at this point in time is a better team without Ronaldo. Like,
I think that's a totally reasonable assessment.
I mean, obviously, you know, he's a legend, especially, you know, there in Portugal. But I think this game really showed that without him in the 11, they have greater tactical flexibility, you know, and they punch. I mean, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He got the hat trick. Gonzalo Ramos, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, I don't know very much about him. He plays for Benfica. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think I've seen him in maybe one Champions League game that I've watched. So shame on me. But, you know, welcome to the big stage, kid.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh. Like, you know, that's incredible. And, they looked really strong. They just looked really strong. And so, you know, I just wonder, is this going to be a continuing trend, or is Portugal going to revert back to starting Ronaldo?
We saw Portugal twice, and one thing that we noticed, just any time Ronaldo was not fed the ball, whether he was available or not, is complaining, getting on the guys, the rest of the team. Why aren't you getting me the ball? Why aren't you feeding me the ball? Get me the ball. Get me the ball. I'm the best player. Get me the ball. And it puts a strain on you as a player. Like, you start thinking like, okay, you know, I think I did the right thing, but this guy's yelling at me that I didn't do the right thing. Like,
yeah.
And without him in the lineup, you don't really have that weighing on you. And you, to your point, play a little more freely. And I agree. I think at this point, You look at Portugal, and without Ronaldo in the lineup, I think just the mindset and approach is different and more healthy. And, you know, I don't know that if Ronaldo's in the lineup, they beat Switzerland 6-1. I don't know that happens. And so I would not be surprised to see him on the bench again against Morocco.
I think he probably should be, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that is a very controversial take, and I totally understand that. But I just think that they demonstrated a really great ability to be more tactically flexible.
Yeah.
As I've already mentioned, right?
Yeah. Maybe if you're behind and you need a goal and he comes off the bench, maybe that's a better approach, and he might not be happy with that, and it is what it is. But I think if you come out with him as a starter and then have to change approach in mid game because it's not working, it makes it harder. Yeah. And so I like I said, I would not be surprised to see them employ the same tactics against Morocco.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to give a prediction for that Portugal Morocco game?
No, I don't. I think Portugal wins. I think it's the end of the line for Morocco, but I think they can do it.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I don't know what I don't know if a ton more needs to be said.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of covered everything, and this is where we're at. So the next round starts on Friday, Netherlands, Argentina, and then Croatia, Brazil, I think is on that day. And then Saturday is Spain, England, France, and Morocco, Portugal. So, all right, I have to do it. I think Argentina is going to. No, I'm going to say Netherlands. I'm going with Netherlands. Going Netherlands against Brazil. And then I'm going with France against Portugal. However, I would love to see Morocco beat Portugal.
Yes,
I would love to see that. And you know, if we get an Argentina Brazil matchup in the semifinal, I'm okay with that too.
And what's your final? And who do you think is going to win at this point?
Final, I will say, I'm going to say France and Brazil, and I'm going to say Brazil.
Okay.
What about you?
I think we get the Argentina-Brazil semifinal that we've all been anticipating,
mm-hmm.
Which would be awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to pick England over France. I don't know. I just have this feeling about England. I don't know. But, yeah, it's just, if Mbappe plays the way he played, I think if France can definitely do it. And I think it's the end of the line for Morocco as well. So I'm going to say it's going to be England, Portugal, and then I'll pick Brazil over Portugal in the final.
Brazil or Portugal in the final. Okay, that's fair.
An all-Portuguese final.
So it's not coming home.
I don't believe it's coming home, no.
Okay, okay. And all
that was my favorite final, question. Yeah. That was my favorite question to ask the English in Qatar.
Is it coming
home? Well, I don't know.
That's so funny. They'll all hang it on Southgate. That's
exactly. Right. But I don't know. England looks really good so far. And I definitely think they could beat France.
Dude, Jude Bellingham, man.
I know.
He's playing out of his freaking mind. So
yes.
That's great to see. Absolutely. He won't be at Dortmund for much longer. Yes. All right. Well, Brandon, thanks for hopping on and we're gonna let you get some Z's.
Thank you.
you're still getting tired
to the time difference.
Yeah, exactly. But we appreciate you. Thanks for sharing all your stories and glad you had that experience and some really good memories made. And so, yeah, we're quarterfinals are next, and our next show probably won't be until after the final, but that's not written in stone. But we'll see where we end up. But thanks for listening, everybody.